Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we have a good show for you. Tonight we got Larry Dorman coming up at 8:30. Talking, he's from the AFSCME Union.
Council for here in Connecticut.
Yeah, and he'll be talking about some union issues, and we'll probably talk about the primaries a little bit. That should be a riot.
Yeah.
I think it should be fun. And sports with Pete Wood, Woody in the Ring, and then we got an environmental report by
John Brennan
coming up about 9:15. So now and then we got some incredible news that came up recently. For those of you who are interested in the primaries, and especially Rick Santorum, you gotta love this news. Turns out Rick Santorum's wife was had an unmarried relationship with an abortion doctor before she married Rick Santorum. She found her way to Jesus, I guess. I'm going to read that. Hang on one second here. And this is from the New Civil Rights Movement website. And here, I'm trying to get that.
David
Badash. There you go. Rick Santorum's wife, Karen, before their marriage, was living in an unmarried relationship with a with Pittsburgh's. Hang on a second. Karen, before their marriage, was living in an unmarried relationship with the founder of Pittsburgh's first abortion clinic in the 1970s. He left the doctor to marry Santorum at the time. Both Karen and Rick Santorum claimed to be pro-choice. And further, the doctor, OBGYN Tom Allen, is the same man who actually delivered Karen Santorum's, then Karen Garver, and is 40 years her senior. Let's see. Editorial note. Rick Santorum's attack on the lives and relationships of unmarried people, including but not limited to the people within the LGBT community.
That's the lesbian, gay, bi, and transgender community.
We feel allow for this level of scrutiny on both his part, past, and that of his family. The Santorum's life choices certainly are theirs to make, but building a political career, attacking the lives of good, decent Americans, pledging to die on the hill to stop some sex marriage inequality.
Same-sex marriage.
Yeah, he's not one of them. And we're not judging their choices as fervently as we disagree with them. We're highlighting their hypocrisy and their mistaken view that they have the right to judge us for who we are. Now, this is from an editorial note here. But the local Philadelphia newspaper, which includes an interview with Santorum, quotes Dr. Allen, Karen's former boyfriend. He says, When she moved out to be with Rick, she told me I'd like him, and he was pro-choice and a humanist, said Allen, an elderly but vibrant man, during a brief conversation on the porch of his Pittsburgh row home. But I don't think there's a humanist bone in that man's body. This is the abortionist guy. And a profile also reveals that both Rick Santorum's parents worked for the federal government, the Veterans Administration, and were housed on the grounds of the VA hospital. Santorum's father was the chief of psychology, his mother the chief of nurses, the profile reveals. So much for Santorum being able to understand current medical stances on homosexuality, so much for Santorum's position on small government. Ironically, the profile from 2005 includes this line. He had Republican values, adds U.S. Republican Tom Feeney, Now they call his friend of Santorum's, but it's not like he was running around leading conservative jihads or anything. And the profile also has that Santorum's view on abortion changed around this time as well, recalls his cousin. Our extended family has many strong women in it who are intelligent and outspoken. And there was one year Rick stopped my family reunion for an hour or two. It was around the time he was rising to power and becoming rabidly, ridiculously conservative. His views on abortion were quite contentious that year, and for those few hours of his visit, the women all descended upon him like flies, calling him on his change of views. He had always been pro-choice to my recollection. That's why it was such a heated issue that year, and the women in my family felt betrayed. And the article goes on, and I'm going to hope you go to it, because it's really kind of interesting. 2006 video released by True Santorum Campaign. Karen Santorum says, I think it's really sad. I think it's tragic that our opponent would use my family, go after my children in the way he has for political gain. Lost on Mrs. Santorum is how she and her husband are going after our families, our children every day for political gain. Scales are severely unbalanced. And maybe I can play that. I don't know. This is Mrs. Santorum in 2007.
I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, right next door to the house that we're in. This is my home. I used to babysit this home when I was a little girl. And my whole life was here. My education, I went to the local Catholic school up the road. I went to high school in East Liberty and Sacred Heart. And I went to Duquesne, West Penn Nursing School, and then Duquesne University, and then Pitt Law School. So... And the places where I worked were all
so she's
here. So I'm very much rooted. This really is my life here. When I hear people criticizing Rick and my family for being in Virginia, it's really hard. It's extremely hard emotionally because it's something that we believe so passionately in, that family comes first. I absolutely did not want to move, and it was a very tough decision. You know, do I stay here? And I have my mom and dad and my brothers and sisters and my friends, but I don't have my husband, and my children don't have a dad. I think it's really sad. I think it's tragic that our opponent would use my family, go after my children, and the way he has for political gain. That's a very tragic thing. There are so many days when I am here with the kids and holding down the fort because he's out there working for someone. I
think I've had enough of that. But this is just interesting that, I'm sorry. It was just a statement that I wanted to read that was really good. Oh, yeah. What does all this have to do with Karen Santorum's past before her marriage to the senator? In simplest terms, Mrs. Santorum was living in a situation unmarried but cohabitating and presumably using birth control that has become only more common in American society since the late 80s. Then she lived with Dr. Ellen. Indeed, the only difference between Karen Santorum and millions of other Americans in similar circumstances then and now was the unusually large gap in age between her and her partner. Just like 40 years. So anyway, but it's so hypocritical. It's unbelievable, these people. So we'll go back to the news. I thought you'd get a kick out of that, folks. This, I know I'm bashing Santorum tonight, but God, he needs it. And this is a one-minute video ad that Ron Paul ran on Santorum. All right, and it's called Betrayal. And listen to this. This is great. He ran this in New Hampshire.
One serial hypocrite exposed.
He went the other way when he got paid to go the other way.
Now, another has emerged. Rick Santorum, a corporate lobbyist and Washington politician, a record of betrayal. The facts? Santorum promised a balanced budget amendment, then voted five times to raise the debt ceiling, even for the bridge to nowhere, adding trillions to the debt. Then he admitted, I'm no longer a deficit hawk. I had to spend the surpluses. Santorum promised to stand with workers, then sided with big money union bosses, with the special interests, then took the most lobbyist cash in Washington and was named one of the most corrupt members in Congress. America's challenges are too great. Don't be fooled. Rick Santorum, a record of betrayal. Another serial hypocrite who can't be trusted.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
That's right on the money, that one was.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, the fact that that guy, that Santorum, was actually getting any votes whatsoever is amazing in New Hampshire. Let's see, there's, going back to, I've got a lot of good stuff here tonight. War plans with Iran. The U.S. finally admits its criminal bankruptcy. This is kind of interesting. How criminal our country really is.
This is from Global Research.
Yep.
America is now bankrupt financially, economically, and politically, and morally. Its criminal aggression towards Iran is just one of the many parts of a jigsaw that add up to a clear and grotesque picture of what the United States of America now represents in the 21st century. The numbers and pictures for the constituent parts of this odious jigsaw puzzle are well known. But what has become glaringly clear is just how integrated the official image of the U.S. now is. Bankrupt. Terminally in debt, mass poverty at record levels, rampant militarism, draconian curbs on civil liberties, government by the rich for the rich, and lately, the reactionary debased catfight that passes for a political debate among Republican contenders for the presidency. Cringing is the sight of super wealthy career politicians throwing sand in each other's eyes to scramble up the poll for yet further personal accumulation of capital. Disturbing is the easy way that psychopathic targeting of imagined enemies, whether at home or abroad, is worn like a badge. It is a sign of how depraved the American political mind has become when would-be presidents can so openly talk of conducting foreign policy in terms of unquestioned international aggression. Of course, this kind of political and moral bankruptcy is not just confined to those seeking office. It is the coin of those who are already in office. In a report in the New York Times Monday, we have the startling admission that, taken together, show that the U.S. government should be certified as criminal if further proof were needed. First, we have the top U.S. military man, confirming that long-averred war plans against Iran are indeed going ahead. In the New York Times, when asked on CBS Face the Nation about how difficult it would be to take out Iran's nuclear ability in a military strike, General Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said, "Well, I could rather not discuss the degree of difficulty in any way, encourage them to read anything into that. But I will say that my responsibility is to encourage the right degree of planning, to understand the risks associated with any kind of military option, in some cases to position assets." Whoops, I just lost my place.
No, you're right. To position assets, to provide those options in a timely fashion. Now those activities are going on. And in other words, the U.S. is preparing for war.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, in the above lengthy article about the imminent opening of Iran's second uranium enrichment plant at Qom, located under a mountain and impregnable from attack, the New York Times buries General Dempsey's admission within the folds of its paragraphs, perhaps in a bid to make it impregnable from attack by sane readers. Granted, the bellicose talk of U.S. Commander-in-Chief Barack Obama and his administration of all options on the table has become so routine that the editors of the New York Times have probably become inured to criminal admissions and so don't think them worth any higher prominence than a final paragraph.
But here is the second part of the equation that adds up to definite criminality. In the same story, the New York Times quotes U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta making what should be a startling admission that Iran does not have a nuclear weapon. Panetta says, "Are they trying to develop a nuclear weapon?" No. That Panetta finally admits What many people around the world know to be true, including American intelligence agencies in at least two U.S. national intelligence estimates, 2007 and 10, that is, that Iran is not attempting to develop a nuclear weapon, should be a front-page headline, especially when taken together with U.S. General Dempsey's disclosure that war plans are afoot. From its own admission, therefore, the U.S. government is pushing the world into possibly a World War III scenario on the basis of totally spurious claims that even its own top brass do not believe.
Reflecting the bankruptcy that has corroded the U.S. political establishment is the way that the New York Times, America's best-style premier newspaper, glides over these nuggets of self-indictment as if they were worthless banalities. So if Iran is not even trying to develop a nuclear weapon, as Panetta now admits, what then is the criminal U.S. warmongering predicated on? Unofficially, the real reason is imperialist rivalry with other powers, Russia and China in particular, in the energy-rich Persian Gulf and the Central Asia regions, and the attempt to engineer regime change in Iran to one that is pliant with Washington geopolitical designs.
Let's see what else there is.
Okay. Officially, for what it is worth, it seems now that the U.S. is not happy even with the mere suspicion that Iran may be, just maybe, one day capable of developing nuclear capability.
This is where facts can be helpful. As a signatory of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, Iran has the legal right to develop nuclear capability for civilian purposes. This is what Iran has consistently said it's doing, and what countless UN inspectors of facilities over many years, including the New Planet COM, have verified. The enrichment of uranium constitutes nuclear capability and is an essential part of harvesting nuclear energy for civilian energy. Iran should be congratulated for this achievement, given the years of gratuitous sanctions by the U.S. and Western allies. By the way, the U.S. government and its Western allies put it, Iran's legitimate nuclear capability is made to sound like a diabolical threat. Panetta again. But we know that they're trying to develop a nuclear capability, and that's what concerns us. There you have it. The United States can drop nuclear weapons on civilians, possesses up to 10,000 nuclear warheads, supply its allies illegally with such weapons, and continue to violate the purpose of the Non-Proliferation Treaty by not disarming its nuclear arsenal. Yet if a country uses the provisions of the Non-Proliferation Treaty legitimately to pursue nuclear capability, then it's reviled and made a target for an illegal war of aggression, most probably with nuclear weapons. This is depravity-turned foreign policy emanating from supposedly the most democratic government in the world. In that way, the unseemingly Republican Party catfight between Romney et al. Is but a symptom of the chronically bankrupt body politic that is American government in the 21st century. And this is from Finian Cunningham in Global Research Middle East.
It's so true. I mean, it's just the ultimate crime. And you wonder how many damn neocons are still. I mean, we're still following the Bush plan.
Yep.
You know. And that's why
as I've said to you very often, it doesn't really matter who's in office. American foreign policy remains the same.
That's why I can't even think of voting for Obama or supporting anything.
Well, I've also said to you, the only difference is if you get a Democrat, you get a few more peanuts thrown to the gallery.
Yeah, not really, not under Obama, trust me. Anyway, EU halts imports of U.S.
Then you would get with
corn.
A Republican. Thank you very much, Leo. Not true.
I don't give a shit. I'm not. I can't vote for either party. You know, they're just totally bankrupt. You know, morally and every other way. All right.
I didn't say they weren't.
Well, I don't care. I mean, that's what we said, and that's basically the way it is. EU halts imports of U.S.-based corn gluten feed due to GMO contamination. Now, you know, it just amazes me that Americans can continue to use this when everyone else won't. You know, dying like flies. Anyway, the European Union halts imports of U.S.-based corn gluten feed due to GMO contamination. The European Union has rejected roughly 1 million tons of U.S.-based corn gluten feed, a leftover byproduct of corn processing that is commonly fed to conventional livestock, over concerns that it might be tainted with illegal genetically modified organisms. Unlike the U.S., the EU still has at least some standards when it comes to GMOs and has typically been much slower to adopt them compared to the countries in the North and South America. Reuters Africa reports that corn gluten shipments into the EU have basically stopped as a result of contamination concerns, and many traders are now trying to figure out a solution. However, the report slants the issue and blames EU restrictions rather than the U.S. tainted food supply for the ordeal, and suggests that the EU needs to loosen its standards to keep the supply going. Well, the EU has already capitulated to heavy pressure from the biotechnology industry in its advocate countries like the U.S. to fast-track GMO approval. And even though EU labeling requirements for GMOs are largely eliminated them from the food supply, when given the choice, of course, the vast majority of people will choose non-GMO foods. GMOs still sneak their way into European food supply via an animal feed loophole. Yeah. In fact, the EU Commission recently decided to end its zero-tolerance policy for GMO because, frankly, it is near impossible to avoid GMO contamination these days, especially when the import goods are coming from the U.S. So even though Europeans resoundingly oppose GMO, they are still exposed to them every time they eat meat from a conventionally raised animal. But in the case of the tainted corn gluten feed, the contamination in question comes from a certain type of GM corn. And they name it, but it's hard to name it. Syngenta's MIR-162 variety, which has not yet received EU approval. Only 37 GM crops have been approved for import into the European Union, and this MIR is not one of them, as EU standards for approval are much more stringent than they are in the U.S. But rather than loosen its standards, as many are demanding, the EU would do better to preserve its own food supply by looking for new corn gluten vendors in nations that have not capitulated to the demands of the biotechnical industry. The only way to end the expanding tyranny of GMO foods is for countries that oppose them to stop trading with the countries that cultivate them. I agree with that fully. You?
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. What would you like to read there? Would you like to read this one?
No, I'm not interested in that.
Juicing medical marijuana, the latest trend in amazing cures. Natural news, GMO crops and the environment and humankind.
I'm more interested in Homeland Security Monitor's journal.
All right. You don't care about the nutritional element tonight.
Well,
tonight.
I do, but I don't feel like I think we should refer people to those articles.
Yeah. In fact, please go to Natural News to check out some of these articles.
They have wonderful articles on Natural News. Wonderful.
Yeah,
but I would like people to be aware of this.
Right.
And this is from, I just want to say who it's from.
It's from
Homeland Security
Russian TV.
Monitors journalist, and it's from, yeah, Russian TV.
Mm-hmm.
This is interesting. Freedom of speech might allow journalists to get away with a lot in America, but the Department of Homeland Security is on the ready to make sure that the government is keeping dibs on who is saying what. Under the National Operations Center Media Monitoring Initiative that came out of the DHS headquarters in November, Washington has the written permission to retain data on users of social media and online networking platforms. Specifically, the DHS announced the NCO and its Office of Operation Coordination and Planning can collect personal information from news anchors, journalists, reporters, or anyone who may use traditional and or social media in real time to keep their audiences situationally aware and informed. According to the Department of Homeland Security's own definition of personal identifiable information, or PII, such data could consist of any intellect that permits the identity of an individual to be directly or indirectly inferred, including any information which is linked or linkable to that individual. Previously, established guidelines within the administration say that data could only be collected under authorization set forth by written code. But the new provisions in the NOC's write-up means that any reporter, whether someone along the lines of Walter Cronkite or a budding blogger, can be victimized by the agency. Also included in the roster of those subjected to the spying are government officials, domestic or not, who make public statements, private sector employees that do the same, and persons known to have been involved in major crimes of homeland security interests, which to itself opens up the possibilities even wider. The department says that they will not only scour publicly made info available while retaining data, but it doesn't help but raise suspicions as to why the government is going out of their way to spend time, money, and resources on watching over those that help bring news to the masses. The development of the DHS comes at the same time that the U.S. District Judge Lehman O'Grady denied pleas from supporters of WikiLeaks who had tried to prevent account information pertaining to their Twitter accounts from being provided to federal prosecutors. Jacob Applebaum and other advocates of Julian Assange's whistleblower site were fighting to keep the government from subpoenaing information on their personal accounts that were collected from Twitter. Last month, the Boston Police Department and Suffolk, Massachusetts District Attorney subpoenaed Twitter over details pertaining to two recent tweets involving the Occupy Boston protests. The website Fast Company reports that intel collected by the Department of Homeland Security under the NOC monitoring initiative has been happening since as early as 2010, and the data is being shared with both private sector business and international third parties. I don't know what that means exactly.
What's that?
Who are these international third parties?
Probably the Mossad or the Interpol or other
And companies. Who would the businesses be? Like security agencies?
Or marketing, just for sheer marketing purposes, that buy that information. But
so the government is really selling this information to people?
Well, I think this government is not, but Twitter is.
Mm.
And I think that's what's really happening. Because Twitter has the right to market your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Public. So, anyway. And
so anything you say or even possibly think of, they probably collect and report.
With
really
me, I share all my thoughts, all my political stuff. All the stuff you're reading tonight here, we're reading tonight, is not is posted on Facebook.
Which is social media.
Social media.
Mm-hmm.
And,
But these are all articles by other people.
Yeah.
Off other websites.
And comments made by me, but it's never.
And by others.
Yeah. So, but that is part of what it's about, and keeping people informed. Even the IRS. Not the IRS, but the FBI. So, what we're going to do is we're going to call our guest.
It's 8:30. It's Larry Dorman. He's Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME, Council for Union in New Britain, Connecticut.
And we've had Larry on a number of times. We try to have him on once a month and to update us on all his union affairs.
I'm particularly interested in what he thinks about what's happening in New Hampshire.
Hello.
Hi, Larry. It's Lila.
Hey, Lila. How you doing?
Hey, good evening, Larry. How are you?
Leo, how you doing?
Good.
So you are you listening to the primary results from New Hampshire?
Well, I guess I have to. What are you? Are you guys? Is that what you guys are doing? I mean,
yeah.
It's
well, we were just before we went on the air, and it looked like Romney was in the lead with Ron Paul a close second.
Right. Right. Not to say that I don't take it seriously. I do, but you know, it's hard to difficult to watch these guys.
Pretty hard, isn't it? Yeah,
arguing
yeah.
about how much they can hurt the people.
Yeah, we just had an article tonight. We read an article earlier on here about Rick Santorum's wife. As it turns out, before she married Rick Santorum, she was living with a abortionist doctor.
40 years older
than she was. And, you know, and she moved out to join Rick Santorum, who at that point was a pro-choice
humanist,
yeah.
Right.
See, it's nothing like a little money that will change you, huh?
And that's the thing. It's depressing, really, to watch these people in the Republican primary. You know, they seem to have very few fixed positions. You know,
the dripping
malleable.
Yeah, I mean, it's the hypocrisy of these guys that make you sick.
Yeah, and you know, I think the one thing they share is that they don't have any plan that would benefit regular, everyday working people. That's about
the commonality. Oh, that's for sure. We seem to not be important to them at all. I mean,
No.
Except they sort of talk about jobs, but never really say how they're going to create them
and never do create them. So
they seem to be very good at talking about how they've gotten rid of people, though. That seems to have happened.
Yeah, or else you have Gingrich, who you know wants school-age children to be janitors and custodians.
Doesn't that wipe? That amazes, yeah.
But the one good thing about all the publicity that he's gotten, I think that people have kind of caught on to what a real hypocrite he is. Even other Republicans have caught on.
Right. He seems to be shrinking a little bit.
Which is good.
Yeah. But to you know, when you think you're done with the likes of Santorum, you know, back they come like a bad horror movie.
Night
of the Living Dead, you know.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, these monsters come lurching forward.
Yeah,
you know.
This will certainly position Democrats, I think, for a run, which will be interesting. We'll see what happens. Obama.
I don't want to presume that though, because they've done such a horrible job of defining themselves, and you know they've help create part of the problem we have with these Republican crackpots.
Well, this is true. This is true. You're absolutely right about that. But it looks to me like the Republicans will put up a rather weak candidate. I mean, look at what the Republicans have to choose from.
Yeah, I think even Republican voters are not
turned
necessarily
off.
Liking what they see. In a weird way, the guy that would make me a little bit nervous would be Huntsman, but I don't think he seems to stand much of a chance.
Why is that?
I think he's actually probably one of the more reasonable people in the field, and he might actually be.
He seems to be, doesn't he? Yeah,
hasn't gotten much traction at all.
No, not at all. And he might actually have the most. He might be the most instinctively kind of bipartisan. Person in the bunch, but as you say, he doesn't stand much of a chance. So, you know, we're going to have to put up with this freak show for another few months and see how it plays out. You know,
distracting Americans from some of the real stuff that's going on.
Well, you know, it was incredible, for instance, to watch Romney and other candidates talking about right to work laws and how to hurt unions and how unions are bad for the country. I mean, you know, just and that rhetoric is only going to get worse or more intense if they
more intense
to South Carolina. They move to the right to work states, and so they're clearly their playbook is pretty limited, but they're going to keep pulling the same play out of that playbook. So we'll see how that works for them.
Well, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh a little bit today, and it made me laugh because. What made me laugh is he's absolutely outraged by these debates, by these candidates, that are attacking Romney, but he's attacking Romney for the wrong things, according to him. You know, and they're attacking Muslim, they're attacking his
the Republican way.
The Republican base ideas are what they're attacking. Okay, so he's saying that as soon as he's running. Starts his campaign, he says he's going to have everything to throw at him, you know what I mean? Whoever the front runner is.
All the homework's already been done.
Everything's out there, you know?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's good to listen to that stuff, though, so you get an idea of where these guys are coming from.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, every once in a while we like to listen to him just to see what he has to say. The thing about Rush Limbaugh that always gets me is that the few times that I've listened to him, and I'll be listening, and I'll say, that makes a lot of sense. It's like he's leading me down this path, and then he'll say something that absolutely sends me right over the edge.
Yeah, he's
like the Pied Piper, you know?
Yeah.
He leads you on, but then he drops you off the cliff.
No, don't forget, he's a master.
He's very polished in a lot of ways. He's no fool.
No, and he's a master entertainer.
Oh, he certainly is.
And he is a ratings bonanza. He is, he's the creator, the progenitor of a lot of this hate radio stuff. But he is an entertainer, and he's very. I listen to him a lot, actually, and I'll say that he's very good at what he does.
He must be cringing though through most of it, aren't you?
Do you listen to him while you drive?
Yeah, I do actually. First, I like to see what the other side's saying, but I hear what the other side's saying.
Yeah, me too.
But I do, I have this sort of perverse respect for his entertainment skills.
Yeah, I know.
I can't help it either.
When a guy's got 20 million listeners, it's like you gotta say, wow, how's he doing it? But the thing that scares you the most is that so many of that 20 million believe everything he says,
No, and that's the frightening part. It's like listening to the brown shirts being recruited when they say, hey, I'm a ditto head too. And, a lot of these listeners seem like they would just blind.
I don't know if you heard, what's his face? Randy Savage or?
Michael Savage.
Who offered Newt Gingrich $1 million if he'd get out of the race.
If he'd drop out, yeah.
Yeah, you heard that, right? Yeah, but these kind of things are right there. I mean, it's like I don't know where they're going. You listen to these to conservatives. You listen to like Ann Coulter. She hated McCain, and McCain was the front runner back in 2008. Remember?
Right.
She was doing everything to get to knock him out of the box, but that didn't happen. So I don't know how much. Limbaughs and Hannitys and all these guys really, how much they really play with the arch Republican voter,
I don't either. It's hard to estimate. I do think there is the fact is that when you individually, it's hard to measure. I think collectively the problem becomes the chorus is so loud and so insistent, so the black helicopters are buzzing around all the time, between Fox News and Limbaugh and Hannity and Savage.
A lot of that stuff, if people listen to enough of it, it seeps into their consciousness and it becomes part of them,
exactly,
and that's
right.
All they hear a lot of the time.
But you heard that the studies that were done, that surveys that were done, that people who listen to Fox News know less about the news than people who don't listen to the news at all.
There you go. And look, Fox is a propaganda station.
Yeah.
They take the Limbaugh model.
So distorted in their views that they don't get it right in the first place. So they're more people who don't listen to the news.
Because Fox's goal is not to be accurate or fair or balanced. I mean, again, when you talk about the entertainment value and how shrewd and manipulative Limbaugh is, Murdoch and the Fox people are the same way. Just,
how brilliantly...
Yeah. How brilliantly cynical that they call themselves fair and balanced. They know when they write that they're not.
Well, you see that just in what your local news covers, trying to get exposure for the strikes and for the
union issues.
I mean,
you don't get a lot of time on news shows.
No, it is completely.
But if you're lucky,
or even national news shows.
You know, and that affects obviously it affects how people perceive unions. It affects how people perceive
right.
the issues. You know, again,
hey, the way they demonized Wisconsin, the right has just completely demonized the movement there.
Oh, the recall.
Yeah, which I think is a tremendous thing.
Yeah, and I think it shows how scared they are if this stuff worked. And I don't know. I don't want to go so far as to say they demonized, but they have demonized the Occupy Wall Street,
as
radicals, and they've painted it as ineffective because I think they're very afraid that if it does coalesce and it does become more permanent, it's going to influence the political direction.
So I was kind of surprised. But what I wanted to ask you, Larry, was what are you guys doing now? What's ASME up to now? What are their plan? What are they doing here in Connecticut? What are they doing nationally?
There's a lot on the table. Obviously, it's last year was unlike any other we've seen. But quite frankly, we are in a state of kind of permanent budget crisis, both at the state and local level. And I think that we are going to be working very hard to do many things, try to organize new workers. We think that's just absolutely got to happen. We just organized school cafeteria workers in Burlington, Connecticut. We're very pleased about that. There's 20 workers. It's not a huge number, but it's significant that, I think a lot of We're getting a lot of workers contacting us who don't have unions, who want representation. So that's one thing. We are getting ready for the legislative session that starts on February 5th, and we are going to be pushing very aggressively to the legislature. We got legislation through that allows municipalities to buy into the state plan, and Malloy's been pushing back a little bit against that, but we're going to pursue that with a handful of first selectmen or mayors who want to do that, and that's going to lower costs in the towns. But we want to put together a platform or a program or a campaign, I should say, around pensions and the fact that too many Connecticut residents, too many Americans don't have retirement security. So those are some of the things on the plate.
I think what scares me recently, well, it has for some time, but more so recently because I've seen so many articles about it, is the loss of these pensions. Do they actually have the money there to pay these pensions? A lot of these states are facing bankruptcy themselves,
Right, and there's several layers to what you just said. I mean, one layer is the issue of funding, and along with that, how assets are invested. But the fact is, the pension crisis is something that has been manufactured to hurt working class people. So it's indisputable that municipalities and the state have not funded properly. Are prepared for their pension obligations. There's also been changes in accounting rules that make it easier for municipalities to say the burden is too great because they have to calculate what's happened in the past as well as going forward. I don't want to bore you with the details, but changes in accounting principles. And, against the backdrop of an economy that tanked because of Wall Street, and when Wall Street tycoons tanked our economy, they also tanked our retirement security with it, as you both know. And so you're going up against, these micro and macro economic trends that are very difficult to combat. So in the end, the problem becomes one, not of, you know, public pensions being too lavish, but, you know, it's not that we should be taking pensions away from public employees. It's that we don't have enough people who have retirement security, and that's kind of what our campaign is going to be about. We need to do something about the fact that more and more people are losing their retirement income, and we've got to do something to stop that.
How do you think Malloy will be to work with now that he's in office?
You know, we obviously had a rocky year last year.
We had a lot from our union.
Yeah, our members gave up quite a lot. You know, to his credit, he's one of the few governors who was willing to raise taxes, but we don't think he did it enough in terms of the wealthy and the closing the corporate loopholes and changing the recording rules that would that allow corporations to cover up money. So, we've got a ways to go. Clearly, he's not doing what Mitch Daniels is doing in Indiana or what Scott Walker did. So I think he'll be at least more reasonable to work with on some of these issues.
I think we should issue a report card.
A union
report card for these political officials for their first year of service.
Especially since you so strongly backed them, you know.
And we gave up so much as a union.
Right, and you know that's a great idea actually. And when I think about the fact that obviously. The one thing I didn't mention, and that was on purpose, was you know when you talk about what's on the table in 2012, we're going to have some fairly momentous elections, both state level as well as the national level, including the presidential race that you mentioned up front, Congress, and a bunch of state rep and state senate seats. So it's going to be a fascinating year, and it's going to be. I talk about these kind of. This permanent budget crisis, and it's being used to bludgeon the working person, whether they're in a union or not. And that's really the big problem. That's really what we all have to push back against is that the powerful interests, corporate and wealthy interests, that help tank this economy want to push forward the agenda of the 1% at the expense of the 99%, and I think that's really that's the big issue facing us and facing all workers, whether they're union or not.
And that seems to be continuing.
Yes,
have
you noticed? And that's what the Republican debates have been about is, you know, how can we enrich those who already are hoarding and lording over us? And
we have a caller. I think it's George Dixon. I don't know if he has if he wants to ask you a question.
Would you be willing to take a question?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's see.
Hello, George. Is that you?
Yeah,
George?
It is. How you doing, folks?
Ask Larry a question.
Did you hear that we have a guest, Larry Dorman? Did you hear what he had to say? He's a Public Affairs Coordinator from AFSCME Union. Do you have a question for him?
No, other than, Larry, I've been listening to you for a while now. But I was able to, I couldn't get you on the Internet. I was on for a while. So I called in so I could hear the show, and I haven't really got the gist of your talk. So I'm just tuning in.
Okay. Well, we'll just mute you there. Okay, thanks for tuning in there, George. All right, Larry, that was George Dixon. But turns out he couldn't get us on the Internet for some reason. What I wanted to ask you was, in all that you're seeing here for 212, I know he's the last chance, he's the last, the only hope we got here, but do you see Obama, I mean, do you still feel the same way you did about him and supporting him?
Really, that's a good question, and I think that it's been.
Idea.
I think it's been clear. You know, I think he's made it clear that he's been more limited than he thought he would be in pursuing his agenda. I still think we do have to hold him to a higher standard than simply one of the other guys are such dangerous hucksters that you got to
choose
me instead. So I do hold him to a higher standard. And part of the problem has been that the, as I said to you before, I think that there were 2 years in which he and the Democrats controlled Congress, and they dropped some balls. And that's not his fault. That was the
Advantage of that at all.
Right. That was the timidity of Congress. And so I do hold out. I still continue to be hopeful. I still hold, and we hold, our union holds the president to
a high. You want to hear something? I was shocked when I heard it. I actually heard on Limbaugh's show today that Bain Capital gave more money to Barack Obama than they did to Romney.
I find that amusing.
They gave $76,000 to, now this is from the different employees, to Barack Obama, and only $36,000 to Romney.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Well,
it is,
they
and
all
it isn't.
A winner on their side. I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Buying advantage.
Yeah, and look, we've had, you know, and that's why it's so important for you guys to be doing what you're doing, and, you know, trying to generate.
We keep trying. I'm so glad that we're
because, you know, we're living in a system that is awash in and corrupted by money, and so when you ask about Obama, the real question isn't so much about him. It's, you know, how are we going to navigate our way as unions?
Through this
political system that is just absolutely awash in what's largely corporate money, and it's both sides of the aisle. And, you know, we're asking ourselves, you know, to think otherwise. So, I'm just still stunned at we've been watching, my daughter and I have been watching a lot of shows. We watched the documentary about Enron, and we watched the recent 60 Minutes has been doing some good stuff on the follow-up to the Wall Street crisis. And look, these guys aren't being held accountable. They're not being brought to justice. This is really incredible stuff, what's happening. And
There's no
justice for white-collar corporate crimes.
And it's worse than that because, you know, when Enron happened, as bad as that was, and, you know, they were responsible, this documentary showed they were responsible for the rolling blackouts in California. Enron executives met privately with Schwarzenegger to engineer that recall of Gray Davis that put Schwarzenegger in office. So
that's right.
You go back to that, and then you run through the Wall Street debacles, and you come to realize that you know what? It's not the sanitation worker who's got a pension that put this country on the precipice. You know, and so that's the real discussion we need to have is how are we going to ever fix that system and get this economy moving so that it actually benefits the people who do the work day in and day out, people like you and your listeners. I mean, this is just this is what's frightening. You know,
You know, even though I can't totally support Ron Paul, there are things about him that I like. I like the fact that he wants to change American foreign policy.
And he wants to end the Fed.
And he wants to end the Federal Reserve. Those are things that I agree with. I don't really agree with his domestic policy at all. But it seems no matter who we have in that major office in government, American foreign policy never changes. And I think that that's one of the things that's draining our system. I mean, we have these perpetual wars, and we're now preparing for another one.
And that's the thing. What you know, we've just got through this debacle in the Middle East that
terrible.
Cost a lot of lives, hurt the treasury, made things very unstable. So, again, you know, it just comes back to who are we allowing to control the system and by extension our lives. And, you know, I don't see any candidate that's come forward with, you know, real good, honest, hard straightforward solutions. And
the problem is that the Obama advisors are the same guys that got us into the mess. Right? You're in the military. I mean, all you've got is neocons in the Pentagon. He hasn't really changed anything there. And
he inherited, I mean, look, you know, in all fairness, obviously Bush and the Republican elite engineered the invasion of Iraq after 9/11. They actually never had a plan to eradicate terrorism or Al-Qaeda, you know, but they did have a plan to get us in this endless quagmire. They did that.
No, it's questionable if there really was any of that. You know, they did it, they purposely did it.
Right,
and
Obama
created Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, and in his defense, you know, he inherited the mess that Bush created. The problem, like you say, though, is that it seems, you know, a lot of the players are still there, a lot of the same actors.
And we're still marching toward that dynasty building, which benefits the 1%.
You know, as much as I don't know what's going to happen if you're going to see an independent candidate come through, but the only one that I would laugh if he did come into the picture is Trump, because he's holding out until April or May, and he could really be a monkey wrench in there.
But I think more to the detriment of the Republicans.
The problem is Obama depends on the independents as well as the Republicans do.
Right.
And most of the independents are like myself, have become extremely disillusioned with Obama.
Right.
And, you know,
no,
it's got a lot to win us back. You know, there's nothing he's got on the plate right now. I mean, you know, that has convinced me that he's the man.
Yeah.
No.
And I want to see, too, and when you talk about kind of, you know, independent voices, I want to see how, if and how the Occupy Wall Street folks resurface.
Me too. I've been looking forward to that.
New Hampshire. Romney, I guess, actually directly, and, you know, he, to his credit, engaged with some of them when they were interrupting one of his speeches. This is going to be interesting to watch, too, just as, you know, the hovering presence of the people, like you say, of Trump.
Well, the conservatives are blaming Occupy on Obama,
right?
You know, but I don't know if that's true or not. I don't really see that.
I think the fact is the Democrats have not largely seem not to have embraced the Occupy movement.
They've kind of gone. That movement is pretty much Ron Paul, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are supporting Ron Paul.
Right. They're actually looking for a new voice. I don't think it's Ron Paul. I think there's too much. He's got too much baggage in a lot of his policy recommendations. But I understand why people would be attracted to someone like that. But I think in the end, he's as much a product of the corrupt system as the.
Well, that's my feeling. He's a Republican. You know?
Yeah, you can't forget that. You know,
people want to forget that he's a Republican, and you know,
right.
And they're treating him like an independent. But he's running in the Republican primaries.
But let's see if Time Magazine's Person of the Year continues to, which is the protester, continues to. Be a force in 2012. It's at least at a minimum going to make the primaries and presidential campaign and all the other races very interesting.
I
think there are a couple of things that we have to have in our system that could make a difference. One, we could have multiple parties and multiple parties at the table. I mean, multiple parties being able to put up candidates to be in debates instead of people being excluded like in the past,
and get rid of corporate money.
And
yeah,
we certainly should have term limits. I don't think people should be in there for a lifetime job. And I think we definitely need campaign finance reform, not the kind of stuff that we have now.
Can't disagree with anything you said, and you know, after the Citizens United decision that the Supreme Court rendered almost 2 years ago, that's just caused so many that's just worsened the situation.
The situation, it really has.
You know, we do need comprehensive campaign finance, and again, I keep coming back to the fact that when thanks to Bush the senior and that stupid kid of his, you know, we've got some really bad people serving in the Supreme Court. You know, people like Clarence.
Oh,
Trump,
yeah.
Just absolutely no respect for the law, for their colleagues. you know, that's the Supreme Court that made the Citizens United decision, and that continues to, that's just going to have terrible reverberations because there's no way people can compete with.
Well, Larry, I don't want to cut you off, but I got two more people. But I wanted to thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
And we appreciate everything you're doing out there.
Good. We'll be in touch.
We'll have an update in a few more weeks, I hope.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Thanks, Lila. Thanks, Leo.
Thanks.
Take
so
care.
Much.
Good night. All right, have a
good night. See you. That was Larry Dorman from the Ask Me Union. And right now we're going to go to,
In the Ring with Woody, right
with
here.
Woody.
And here's
right.
his music.
We got going. What happened to my theme music?
Sorry, guy, hit the wrong button.
he hit the wrong button, so there wasn't anything
I feel like I should be reporting on how the fish are running, but I guess I'll do what I was going to do anyway. Okay. Good evening, sports fans. Watch your heads on the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics, NFL playoffs. That's it. Let's get down to it. Okay, this weekend I was 2 out of 4, so I was 50-50. Let's talk about the games a little bit. Houston, Cincinnati. Houston was at home, and Cincinnati was getting points. I thought Cincinnati was going to possibly pull it out. This was the game I had the least amount of faith in, and but I did pick Cincinnati anyway. They lost. Houston put it on them. They were at home. And Cincinnati did what they usually do. They just kind of choked. They have a lot of talent on that team, like I said, but a lot of times they don't beat the teams that they're supposed to beat, and they certainly should have beaten Houston. Okay. The New York Football Giants played the Atlanta Falcons, and they cleaned their clocks, just as I predicted. The Giants' defense stepped up. Eli Manning certainly is looking like the all-star quarterback that he claimed to be. Many people may or may not remember at the beginning of the season, he rated himself as an elite quarterback. Many people at the time, myself included, weren't believing that. But the kind of season that Manning has had, he certainly backed up his words. I think he's moved up from the 8th or 9th best quarterback in the league, definitely into the top 5. And that's a vast amount of improvement. Good for him and good for the New York Football Giants. The New Orleans Saints played at home against the Detroit Lions. As predicted, the Saints put it on the Lions. However, had the Lions capitalize on some turnovers and some plays that could have went their way, the game, the final score could have been very different. I think that if you played that game maybe 10 more times, Detroit would probably win 3 or 4 of those games. Detroit definitely had a chance to beat New Orleans, and I think that's why I believe New Orleans is suspect in the next this upcoming weekend, which I'll talk about shortly. And the final game that I watched this weekend was the Pittsburgh Steelers. They traveled out to Denver to play Tim Tebow, God's second son, according to most people. Pittsburgh severely banged up. However, you know, nobody wins, you know, you win or lose with your injuries, and those are breaks. Roethlisberger was basically on one leg. They still played a great game. Pittsburgh definitely should have won the game. But in overtime, first overtime ever with the new rules change, Denver won with one big 80-yard pass play. And, you know, you got to tip your cap to Denver. They won fair and square, but the next level is going to be a different story. Let's move on to my picks, which is the next level of play. We have the New Orleans Saints traveling out to San Francisco. Now, New Orleans is extremely fast due to playing, they play inside. You can be damn sure that San Francisco is going to have their field wet. So it slows down some of those running backs and slows down some of those receivers. I think the San Fran's defense, unlike the Detroit defense, will capitalize when the opportunities arise. Also, San Fran has a superior running game. Drew Brees and his offense can't score if you keep them off the field. And I think San Fran is also probably going to get some defensive points. So I'm going to pick San Fran, and they're getting points at home. They're getting 3.5. See, you got to like that. Now, you have the New York Football Giants traveling up to Green Bay. The weather's going to be typical Green Bay weather, 20-something degrees. The Giants lost to Green Bay this year by a score of 38-35, and they very well could have won that game. They're getting 9 points. I think it's going to be close. I'm not exactly sure if the Giants are going to win on the field, but I certainly think they're going to keep it within 9. So I would take the Giants plus the 9 points. Now, next game we have the New England Patriots at home against Tim Tebow. Now, the spread is 13.5. Denver is going to need every one of those 13.5 points. I think New England is going to break it off right up in Denver's ass. So I'm taking New England, as much as I hate them, minus the 13.5. Tom Brady at home, he was pumped when they played Denver before. Believe me, the last thing Tom Brady wants to hear about is Tim Tebow and how he's, Jesus reincarnated, so on and so forth. Tom Brady is not going for that, I can assure you. And they are really going to stick it to these dudes. Guaranteed. All right. So, the last game we have Baltimore. They're playing at home against Houston. I think Houston's going to get a little taste of their own medicine. Baltimore's really going to put it on them with their defense. That spread is 9 points. It's going to be close, but I think Baltimore is actually going to cover, not by much, but they're going to cover. And they're probably going to score a little stuff on defense. So, my picks for the weekend are Baltimore minus 9, San Fran plus 3, New England minus 13.5, and the Giants plus 9. That's it for this week. Shout out to all my woodheads out there, Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg at AFS, and everyone at Northeast Athletic Club. Zip up, otherwise you get a cold and a sore throat like me. That's all. Till next week.
Okay. Thank you, Woody.
Thanks for being on. a lot of stuff has been being done on marijuana.
Mm.
And I've got a couple articles here tonight. I was going to read one.
There's one on juicing marijuana.
Yeah, juicing medical marijuana. The latest trend in amazing cures.
Well, the thing that's great about it is it has no side effects.
And there's another one that I have that shows that a study just came out today shows that smoking marijuana has no fatal, no harmful lung. They've found nothing wrong with the lungs.
Gee, and I had heard before that it did, like smoking could cause some problems
with
the lungs.
Well, they say this, but if you smoke and smoke marijuana at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you have a less chance of you know,
having lung disease?
Lung problems, because marijuana acts as an expectorant,
mm-hmm.
and it cleanses. And for some reason, they found that people that do both have less effect on their lungs. So I just wanted to.
Well, we're waiting for John to give us a call. Let's read this.
Yeah, juicing medical marijuana, the latest trend in amazing cures.
There have been a few articles written about the multitude of environmentally sustainable industrial applications of hemp. There have been perhaps many more written about the medical applications of cannabis. Now there is a formerly skeptical California doctor who has found the optimal method of using marijuana for health. Unfortunately, the DEA, an arm of the U.S. Justice Department, has made sure marijuana remains as a Class 1 drug under federal law. This classification means that a drug can be easily abused without acceptable safety, even under medical supervision, and basically has no medicinal merit. The DEA declared this despite the fact that 926 medical research studies on non-psychoactive cannabidiol and other cannabinoids recorded in PubMed on September 22, 2011, were mostly positive with their pharmacological findings. And another government agency, the Department of Health and Human Services, has a U.S. research patent on CBD from 2003. This is an excellent government example of government bureaucracy doublethink. It's dangerous. It's a dangerous drug that's useless as medicine, and we're researching it as a medicine. The question is for whom? The Health and Human Services research is conducted by the National Institute of Health, which is currently researching CBD's potential for curing cancer. They are getting positive results. Also, in addition to eliminating pain and anxiety, CBD seems to make cancer cells die. Many already know this, but it appears that an arrangement is underway to synthesize and patent a CBD formula for big profit. Dr. Alan Frankel, MD, explains the slight difference between the THC and CBD molecules in this three-minute video, so we can't play that right now.
The unusual new approach for healing the THC-CBD hemp. The current methods of taking in medical marijuana include smoking, vaporizing, ingesting edibles, and reducing THC hemp into a vial of concentrated hemp oil. They all have healing qualities, but the concentrated hemp oil that Rick Simpson discovered seems to have been the most efficacious form of medical marijuana, at least up to now. Now it appears that Dr. William Courtney, MD, has discovered the best way to take in CBDs and other beneficial cannabinoids without the THC becoming psychoactive, even though it's still in the plant, eating or juicing the whole raw marijuana plant. Dr. Courtney explains that heating marijuana destroys enzymes and excites the THC's psychoactive effects, but if ingested raw, the CBD takes over, and dramatic healing activity occurs without the high. Dr. Courtney met a very ill young lady who had moved to California to take advantage of the state's medical marijuana freedom. And after getting limited results from smoking a vaporizing pot and eating marijuana cookies, cooked edibles, she got involved with Dr. Courtney and was cured completely in a few weeks.
Oh, the method of cannabis ingestion she used was mostly juicing the whole plant. The leaves can be eaten as salads also. The branches are too fibrous for direct consumption or juicing. The young lady's testimony and Dr. Courtney's explanations can be viewed on a video there. The only obstacle is legality. The federal government is booting out states' rights and harassing medical marijuana outlets and plant nurseries. Growing marijuana in sufficient quantity for juicing is impractical under current law. So Dr. Courtney is on a mission to obtain a United Nations consensus for cannabis as a vegetable. The raw plant eaten or juiced don't get anyone high as CBDs overwhelm the THCs. Dr. Courtney considers the marijuana plant's cannabinoid content so healthy eaten or juiced raw that it would be the most disease-preventing and curative food on the planet. Definitely not going to happen then. That'd put pharmaceutical companies out of business.
Well, they're trying to patent it, so they'll, you know, if that happens, then they'll make money on it. I don't know why John hasn't called yet.
Do you have a number to give him a call?
Yeah, I do. In the meantime, I'll have you,
read
something else. This is something that's very important. How to detox aluminum and why it's necessary, especially in the chemtrailing.
They did a lot of that the last few days here.
And the importance of this is aluminum is known to cause so many diseases, and especially Alzheimer's, fibromyalgia,
all kinds of immune deficiency diseases.
So, for us to be involved that way. So I'll have Lila read this, and I'll give John a call.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll get through to us. How to detox aluminum, why it's necessary. We are in the age of aluminum. This according to a lecture by Dr. Chris Exley, Ph.D., at a January 2011 vaccine safety conference in Jamaica. A common expression among those who deflect aluminum's toxicity issues is that aluminum is prominent throughout the Earth's crust. What they fail to mention is that aluminum wasn't widely bioavailable to humans when it began to be mined for creating metals and medicine. Aluminum appearing in cookware, wrapping foils, beverages, and food, tobacco, over-the-counter, and adjuvants in vaccines. Aluminum is highly reactive with chemicals and creates antigens to stimulate immune system antibody responses in vaccines. But the mechanics of those reactions are not understood by Big Pharma. Dr. Exley has been focused on aluminum biochemical mechanics for 2 decades and doesn't claim to know all the answers, but he knows how wrong those who do claim to have all the answers are. They are among the ranks of aluminum toxicity danger naysayers in the vaccine industry.
Hey, John, are you with us?
I don't hear him.
Maybe I'll try him again.
Aluminum body burdens. We all have some level of aluminum in us, which are the tissues most prone to collecting and storing aluminum.
Hello?
Hi, John.
How are you?
Excuse me.
Yeah, I was calling you. I was wondering. You were calling me, and I was already online there. I was listening to you.
Oh, okay. Just let me finish this paragraph. The tissues most prone to collecting and storing aluminum are those tissues with slow cellular turnovers. Cells die off and regenerate quickly on the skin, but not so quickly in bone matter, heart tissue, and the brain. Now, if you're interested in this article, it's from naturalnews.com. And I've read part of it, How to Detox Aluminum and Why It's Necessary. That's what I was going to get into.
Yeah, that's okay. So, John, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I've been looking up some of the strange weather events that have been happening around the country and whether this is Mother Nature or man has interfered with the geoengineering projects, sometimes called chemtrailing, which would include the spraying of aluminum oxide into the atmosphere, and that ties in with what Lila was just been talking about there. The effect on the human body when it goes into the water supply will be detrimental. But I see up in Anchorage, Alaska, one town is buried in snow and another is iced in. This year's winter is being meaner than usual for at least certain Alaskan communities. The residents are actually looking for outside help, and dozens of National Guard members are helping the fishing town of Cordova dig out from the mountains of snow that has at this stage collapsed many roofs and it's triggered avalanches and trapped some people in their homes. By one count, more than 10 feet of snow has fallen in the town of 2,000 people in the last few weeks. And with the high wind... Sorry?
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it was actually more. There was more than 18 feet in some overnight, practically, it fell. And with the high winds and the snow in the forecast, responders and local volunteers are trying to shovel out buildings before, you know, they get heavier with the rain on top of the snow that's there.
18 feet of snow in one night, you know.
Yeah, it's a little odd, all right. But again, you know, this is the new normal. Where everything is, you know, having, you know, tornadoes in Florida in January. That's normal now, the new normal. It isn't normal statistically when you start to look back, you know, into the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Once you get into the 90s and up to the year 2012 that we're in now, people have accepted this as quite normal. You know, it's quite normal for a tornado to rip through Hartford, Connecticut now. It's just normal, you know. They just on it off as that. But it's not. Somebody's messing with the weather. We know the HAARP facility up in Alaska and 60 other facilities around the planet. The Russians are into weather modification. A company called Elate Technologies, E-L-A-T-E. You can check that online. Also, a Long Island Skywatch. I've just been on their webpage. On the right-hand side on Long Island Skywatch, there's some great links to weather modification, papers and patents and everything else. I really would encourage people to go there and check that out. I'm just watching the clock here. We're getting kind of low on time. I'll just update on that thing in Alaska again here now. Let me see what I've got here. A spokesperson for one of the companies that does buildings has said that some of the banks even will have to remain closed because they're in danger of collapsing. And also in the shifting ice in the Bering Sea is making it more difficult for a Russian tanker, which is called Renda, to deliver fuel to the area of Nome. And the Nome needs the diesel and unleaded gasoline after a fall. Fuel delivery by barge was delayed by a storm, so they're in dire straits up there. And by the time the weather has improved, this barge delivery to the iced-in town of about 3,500 people was impossible. So the Coast Guard is bringing up an icebreaker up there, and they're trying to get this 370-foot tanker loaded with 1.3 million gallons of fuel to the people.
Now, you got to wonder what happens to things like the wildlife up there. If you get 18 feet of snow, you know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose they move to high ground as much as they can, but certainly a lot of livestock will die. A lot of livestock died in Scotland in the higher ground last year. So that'll be a story to keep following up on. And now, this isn't the only place there's some strange weather. And we know Texas has had droughts and had floods and everything, but lately you very rarely hear about snow. But today, a strong winter storm dumped about 10.6 inches of snow on Midland, Texas. The same amount Cleveland has had all season. The total broke the daily record snowfall of 9.8 inches, which was recorded back in December 11, 1998. So Monday's record-setting storm was the third to hit Midland this year, bringing the seasonal snowfall total to 19.5 inches, also a record. And Midland hasn't recorded that much snow since the winter of 1946 or 47, where 13.9 inches fell. On the contrary, the residents of the Great Lakes region were asking, where is this snow? Take a look at the seasonal snowfall for the following cities. And Chicago has had 2.7 inches, Buffalo 5.5, Detroit 6.7, Minneapolis 10.3, which is quite high, and Cleveland 10.6. So it's hard to believe Midland has received more than seven times the amount of snow recorded in Chicago this year.
That's amazing. And we haven't had very much snow here, thank God.
Oh,
right. So it's very, very unusual. I mean, to just have one little town that would get snowed on. There's been a lot of very strange things with things like that in Texas. I think there is definitely a lot of strange weather modification done by man, using silver iodide, perhaps. Maybe it's used to fill the reservoirs, and sometimes the experiments go wrong. And that's really...
In isolated areas, they may be experimenting.
Yeah, and I think if people go on to the... if you want to find out if this is really true, if you have any people out there listening who don't believe that they can modify the weather, there was a document in the... You can look it up in the Thomas Library of Congress. It was a couple of years ago. S-517 just comes to mind. There are several new ones they updated, but that would be one of the originals. And there was a weather authorization... Act of 2005 probably, and in there they actually talk about how they would be causing it to, they were funding the enhancement of snowpack over the Wyoming and Utah region to basically fill the reservoirs for the cities, so they increase the snowpack, and our taxes are paying for it. So if your roof collapsed, you probably paid for your own collapse up in Alaska or something, you know. It's pretty sick, but that's the way the world has gone. Yeah, God controls the weather or Mother Nature, but they sure have a lot of help these days, you know.
Yeah, or a lot of hindrance.
Yes. Once you tamper with it in one way, you're going to alter it in another way. It's the old
that's
seesaw
right.
effect.
It's like there's the world has to have a balance. If there's tons of rain in New England, there's no rain in China.
That's right. So it's, you know, it's terrible to think that they may have damaged it beyond going back to the way it used to be.
The other thing that's, one of the things that's gone out of the news, I haven't seen anything lately, is the radiation from the Fukushima nuclear plant and what's happening over there. Have you heard anything about that, John?
Well, I read articles on Rents.com from time to time. They seem to keep up with it. But, you know, it's not in topics are not on CNN or MSNBC. Clearly, that should be a warning to people. When a story is literally buried,
yeah.
You've got to ask yourself why.
Yeah, I've been kind of concerned that I haven't heard anything lately.
I read one recently. I read it, in fact, 2 weeks ago, I think, on the air, about they expect another reactor to blow, to melt down. And they're putting in about 20, what is it, they're leaking radioactive stuff into the Pacific now. They're letting it go.
Because they can't contain it.
Because they can't contain it. So it's going into the Pacific, as well as over 20 million tons of debris is coming to the West Coast, all right, from that tsunami. It's been cited by...
Right, I did hear a report about that.
Yeah, so...
I haven't heard anything more about it.
Yeah, so we're in for a big run. Well, anyway, we're going to be losing our feed in just a second here, but, I mean, we're still recording, but...
Well, like I said, people should try and find out something about the Fukushima. Now, the best source I can really tell you is R-E-N-S-E, rents.com, and there's a whole section there that keeps up to date with it. And also the BP oil spill on rents.com. You know, there's interviews with people, some or videos from Japan and stuff, so, you know, you can make your own analysis of it and compare it with what you've seen on the Tell Lie Vision screen that you look at, you know, the so-called news, because it is a bunch of garbage, really, what you're being fed by the mainstream media, and more people are realizing that.
Oh, yeah. I think they are, and that's why they turn to alternative media and listen to shows and go on YouTube and go to all different kinds of sites to find out really what's going on.
And that's why we have people like Lieberman trying to bring this National Defense Authorization Act to basically eventually be able to shut down the internet. That's one of its main goals, that we'll be considered the sites that are given too much information could be helping Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda, whichever way you like to spell it.
Hey, did you hear there, I think that's the SOPA, I think it's called SOPA Act, and that's the one where Amazon, Google, and Twitter.
SOPA, yes, would be effective.
They're planning to shut down for a day or two to protest that. So be interesting to see what happens.
Well, again, I've always maintained, and I think Dr. Alan Watt on his show has said that basically the internet and Google and Yahoo, all these search engines, it's really all part of a military search system. And all it is it's basically reading our minds and knowing everything we search, profiling us. And it's basically the whole internet, in reality, is just a big spy machine. The future. So, you know, this thing that it's Google Corporation versus Yahoo, and they'll go on strike, I wouldn't really give it much credence. I'd just take as much information as you can, and while you still can get it, because I think they're just slowly telling us that the day is coming when it'll be like pay-per-view or something. They'll do something to make it so expensive.
They just won't even have it.
But it'll be beyond our reach somehow. They're going to make it difficult.
I think the first piece of what you said is probably correct. They're using that to create a profile on you, what you are, what you're like, how you're liable to react.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you go on anything. If you would just test it even, you go on and start click on an ad or put in a phrase looking for furniture, you'll start getting all these ads. It's like the supercomputer knows everything, knows your likes, your dislikes, everything. And it's all kept on file forever on supercomputer.
Yep. Pretty
information.
But anyway, in order for us to remain a radio show and personality, to get people, we got to be public, you know.
That's right.
That we can be, and still hold some kind of privacy. But I don't know what to do. I mean, anybody who's on public the public airwaves. Is subject to, people hearing what you're saying,
And that's probably 80% of the people, because lots of people are on social networks and everything else.
Really?
But
we've been on radio for 10 years now. And
yeah, you're well known.
At least, we're there, and I don't know.
We might be stored in some big supercomputer
else. That's fine, along with 1,000 archives that we have on this show. So, that's okay. But I notice every week that, our old shows are getting hit. All of our shows are getting hit and hit and hit, and thousands of listeners to different shows that even a year ago, 2 years ago, they're still listening to shows that are 3 and 4 and 5 years old. They're coming every day. So it's like, it's just amazing, John. That kind of information isn't there, and when people find it, they tell everybody where it is, and that's what's happening with our show, and I'm grateful for that. Yeah, 100,000 listeners now, and growing.
That's
so,
very good.
Very good. So we're moving right along. I want to thank you, John, for being part of that, and thank you for being on tonight, and look forward to your reports every week.
Yeah, it's just a little report, but somebody may want to check out, like I said, Long Island Sky Watch on the chemtrail issue. They seem to be very up to date with stuff there, almost on a daily basis, which is what I like about it lately.
Oh, John, before you go, was there any resolution to those hearings that you went down to be part of down in Long Island?
Oh, yeah, we didn't follow up on that because I was away. They did have a second hearing, and it nothing passed because the EPA rules, federal rules, override the local rules, basically.
Okay.
And so, I would say something needs to be done about that. But they're still working on it, and the full story is on Long Island Sky Watch. And one last thing, there was a new video in the chemtrail movement. It was a follow-up to What in the World Are They Spraying? It was called The Great Culling. It's still not produced fully, but there's been some trailers. And apparently it's basically trying to make out that the whole thing is a conspiracy theory. So we've been infiltrated, basically, in the chemtrail movement, and it's very important that the producers of this video called The Great Culling, who were mildly connected with Michael Murphy and G. Edward Griffin, and I'm suspicious of them as well now. I think that they were going to try and hog the whole movement and just lead it to the great abyss of nowhere, just like the 9/11 movement was kind of driven into the mud. So The Great Culling, and I'm going to have to say, What in the World Are They Spraying? The producers of those two movies and G. Edward Griffin, be suspicious, be very suspicious of where their next step is. But the video, What in the World Are They Spraying, is an excellent video. The Great Culling, no.
We'll keep an eye on those things then, John.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we depend on you to help us with that.
Yeah, you're the guy.
Well, you know, Rosalind Peterson, you've had her on your show. She's California Skywatch, the Agricultural Something Coalition. She also has written about this. She wants her name taken out and not to be used in any of the movies by these groups who are doing the Great Culling.
Okay.
But again, it's up on Long Island Skywatch, the full, report, I guess is what I'm saying. There might be a video, I was thinking also, but there's certainly a written report from Rosalind Peterson. And there's also an answer back from Michael Murphy, which in fairness sounds fairly legit, but I personally don't trust them anymore. It's just the way I am. Seeing too much.
Too much stuff.
Yeah, too much ins and outs, and you know, I know how it begins and how where it goes, and I don't like it. I smell a rat, and I'm sticking with that. You know.
Well, we'll take your lead, John, and we thank you very much for being on, and we look forward to hearing from you soon, next week.
That's great. Okay, folks, and look forward to being back on. So have a good week, and I will see you then. We'll talk to you then.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
And thank you all for listening to us, and I hope you have a good evening.
Yeah. And here we go. So good night, everyone. And you can join us tomorrow night right here for the we bring you up some more news and views.